Welcome to the Deep Dive. Our mission today is to give you a real crash course in the very near future.
Yeah, we've gone through a pretty heavy stack of sources on early 2026 tech.
Everything from, you know, deep software changes in South Korea to some really wild physical hardware pivots happening in Taiwan and China.
It's a lot to unpack.
It is. And our focus is really on distilling the signal from all that noise. For years, the story was simple, right? Hardware specs went up, chips got faster.
And the phone got bigger.
Exactly. Mm. But that's plateaued now. So manufacturers are being forced to think in a totally different way. And that's leading to what some insiders are calling the optimization war.
And that's our goal for you, to help you get a really quick but thorough understanding of where your next phone and maybe your whole digital life is headed.
So across all these sources, what are the big patterns you're seeing?
Well, three things really jump out. First, there's this intense, almost desperate fight for software efficiency. Being fast matters more than just having more features. Second, we're seeing this sudden return to mechanical, almost weird hardware. People are trying to break out of that black slab monotony.
And the third,
a really significant consumer demand for anti-AI, human-centric tech. People want tools that just respect their independence.
Okay, let's unpack that. Let's start with that first theme, the optimization war. And I mean, there's no better place to start than Samsung.
Oh, definitely. For years, their software, you remember TouchWiz? Now it's One UI. It's always had this reputation.
Feature rich, but heavy. Sluggish even. It felt like carrying a huge backpack just in case you needed one tiny thing inside.
Exactly. That weight came from just layering feature after feature onto old code. It created bloat. And while One UI is much better, the pressure from competitors is enormous.
You're talking about skins like HyperOS from Xiaomi or ColorOS?
Yeah, those are systems that are just buttery smooth. They prioritize speed over everything else. And Samsung realized they had a serious credibility gap when it came to just pure responsiveness.
So they couldn't just throw, what, 16 gigs of RAM into the Galaxy S26 and call it a day?
That's the old way of thinking. They had to go back to basics. And that's this internal project, codenamed Feather.
Which is set to become One UI 8.5. This sounds like more than just an update.
It's a strategic admission. It's them saying out loud that you can't solve inefficiency by just throwing more power at it. It's a dead-end street.
What's really fascinating is the target they've set. A 30% reduction in background processes. That sounds huge.
It is huge. It means they've gone through with a fine-tooth comb and just pruned hundreds of legacy services that, frankly, most people never even use.
So it's not just about making the phone feel faster when you're scrolling.
No, it's engineered specifically to cut down on idle battery drain. You could get an hour or two back in your day, you know, just because the phone is doing less when it's in your pocket.
But if the chip speed isn't really changing, how do we know this isn't just some kind of visual trick? I'm thinking about the animations.
That's a great question. And it leads to the second big change, non-linear interruptible animations.
Okay, break that down for us.
So in a traditional system, when you tap an app, the phone's graphics processor, the GPU, commits to that animation. If you change your mind halfway through and swipe away,
it stutters. It feels sticky.
Exactly. The GPU has to tear down that animation and build a new one, which causes those dropped frames. But with non-linear animation, the engine is fully fluid. It lets you interrupt it at any point without that stutter.
So it feels fundamentally faster.
Yeah.
Even if the raw processing power is the same.
That's the illusion. It's perceived performance. And they're translating that into the user experience with something called the Smart Hub.
This is their reimagining of the old edge panels, right? That little drawer on the side of the screen.
Yeah, which was always so cluttered. The Smart Hub is a complete rethink. It's a minimalist dashboard powered by the phone's on-device AI chip.
The NPU, the neural processing unit.
Right. And for anyone who isn't familiar, that's a piece of silicon designed just for running machine learning models right there on your device.
And why is on-device so important here?
Speed and privacy. It doesn't need to check with the cloud. So if you walk into your gym, the NPU knows your location and the time, and it instantly presents a dashboard with your workout playlist, your timer, your step counter.
So it's personalized, it's instant, and it's not sending your data anywhere.
That's the core of the optimization war. It's not about more features. It's about supreme personalized efficiency.
Okay, so if software is fighting this war against bloat, the hardware side seems to be fighting a boredom war against Well, the boring black slab.
It's a perfect way to put it. We're moving from optimization to just outright radical invention.
And the sources pointed to a pretty wild leak of an engineering prototype, the Xiaomi 17 Ultra.
Yeah, this is a huge statement, a real rebellion against the fixed-lens camera systems we all have now.
This is deep mechanical territory.
Yeah.
Xiaomi and Leica are working on a 360-degree rotating lens system that sounds, well, it sounds brilliant and terrifyingly complex at the same time.
The big prize here is true continuous optical zoom.
So explain that difference, optical versus digital.
Well, your phone right now probably has a few fixed lenses, a 1x, a 3x, maybe a 5x.
Right.
When you zoom to, say, 2x, you're not actually using a 2x lens. The phone is just digitally cropping the image from the 1x sensor, and you lose quality. Always.
But this new system, it operates more like a high-end DSLR lens.
Exactly. The glass elements physically move, so you get lossless optical quality at any point between 1x and 10x. It's seamless.
And they're also adding a mechanical variable aperture.
They're doubling down. Most phones have maybe one or two fixed apertures, like f1.8 minimum for low light. This system can slide smoothly, giving you precise control over light and, more importantly, depth of field.
So you get that beautiful natural background blur that that software has always struggled to get right.
That's the goal.
This all sounds incredible, but it immediately raises a huge red flag for me. Moving parts, dust, water, dropping it.
And that skepticism is totally warranted. We've seen things like pop-up cameras fail for exactly those reasons.
So what's Xiaomi's answer to that?
They're claiming a new nano-seal technology. They promise it will maintain a full IP68 water and dust rating, even with the moving parts. If they've actually solved that, it's a huge engineering breakthrough.
So while Xiaomi is looking outward with these mechanical lenses, Apple's looking inward, chasing that all-screen holy grail.
The ultimate elimination of the dynamic island for the iPhone 18 Pro.
And the sources say this is proving to be immensely difficult.
It is. They've already started the EVT phase. That's the engineering validation test. Starting that early is usually a sign they're expecting major problems with mass production, low yield rates.
And the fundamental problem has always been that screen pixels block light from getting to the camera and sensors underneath.
Right. The dynamic island was the compromise. But the proposed solution is where the real innovation is. A new display tech called microtransparent glass.
Developed with Samsung Display and LG.
Yes. And it's not just about turning off the pixels over the sensors. The real problem is the wiring behind the pixels. This new glass actually makes the subpixel wiring transparent, so enough high-quality light can finally reach the Face ID sensors.
So if they pull this off, the iPhone 18 Pro is that perfect uninterrupted slab of glass we've been promised for years.
And the dynamic island just becomes a four-year stopgap in history books.
That desire for radical change, it connects perfectly to our next segment, this sort of philosophical rejection of mandatory tech.
Yeah, we've all seen it. Google Chrome, Microsoft Edge, they're just forcing AI assistants Gemini Copilot into every single corner of the browser.
And users are hitting a wall of AI fatigue. You're just constantly being interrupted by tools you never asked for.
Which is why Mozilla's move is so strategic. While the giants are zigging towards more AI, Firefox is zagging. They're catering directly to users who just want control back.
With the Firefox AI kill switch?
A physical toggle right in the browser toolbar that aggressively blocks all AI processing, both on your machine and from their servers.
So why should you, the listener, care about this beyond just getting rid of pop-ups?
It's about sovereignty and resources. First, it stops passive data scraping. These AI tools are constantly scanning the page you're on to offer summaries or context. The kill switch just stops that cold.
And second, it's a performance thing.
It's a huge performance thing. These local AI models eat up a lot of RAM and battery. The kill switch ensures your browser is just a browser again, not some operating system trying to run a language model in the background.
It's kind of brilliant marketing, really. It validates that user desire for dumb tech. Tech that just does what you tell it to do.
It's an admission that independence is now a premium feature.
And that need for independence, for functioning without a central command, it connects so perfectly to infrastructure. I'm thinking of that Waymo incident in San Francisco.
That was a massive wake-up call. There was a major power grid failure.
And the result was what some sources called a zombie car apocalypse.
Yeah, the whole autonomous fleet lost its connection to the central servers, and the protocol just made them stop right where they were,
causing instant severe gridlock, trapping emergency vehicles.
It showed just how fragile these smart systems are when you assume 100% uptime for the cloud.
So Waymo was forced to pivot immediately to implementing something they call offline survival mode.
Right. Before, complex decisions like navigating around an unexpected obstacle relied on getting confirmation from the cloud.
And now?
Now, that processing shifts to the car's own onboard edge computer. The goal is total independence. If the cell network goes down, the car can now figure out the safest path to a pullover spot entirely on its own.
So that incident proved a really critical point for smart cities, didn't it?
Absolutely. You cannot build this stuff assuming the internet and the power grid will always be on. The future requires tech that can function autonomously when the central nervous system goes dark.
So while tech independence is crucial for safety, corporate interdependence is crucial for winning the ecosystem war.
And that brings us to the final major strategic alliance shaping 2026.
This is the big unified push from Samsung and Google. It's aimed squarely at closing that ecosystem gap that Apple has dominated for so long.
The seamless flow between an iPhone, an iPad, and Apple TV.
And this integration is focused on the home, specifically the living room, the biggest screen you own.
Right. Starting with the 2026 Samsung Smart TVs, their Neo QLED and OLED models, Google Photos will be integrated natively at the system level.
Which seems like a small quality of life thing, but it removes a massive point of friction.
It does. For years, Android users had these clunky options, you know, casting from your phone or using some terrible TV app. This makes it as seamless as iCloud on an Apple TV.
And it's more than just a photo gallery. They're building some serious intelligence into it, using the TV's own NPU.
Exactly. We're talking AI upscaling. The TV will take your old 1080p family photos and sharpen them up to 4K or even 8K in real time. It's basically improving your memories.
And then there's this feature, generative memories.
This is fascinating. The slideshows in the TV's ambient mode aren't random. They're curated based on who is in the room, if you use the optional camera, or just based on the time of year.
So in December, it automatically starts showing your Christmas photos.
Or your summer vacation photos in August.
Yeah.
It's about making the TV a truly personal hub, not just a content screen. By removing that friction, they're finally building that unified home experience Apple users have had for years.
Okay, let's bring it all back home. The sources seem to point to three really powerful defining trends for 2026. First, the return of weird hardware.
The Xiaomi mechanical camera, Apple's invisible sensors. It's an escape from the boring black slab.
Second, the undeniable validation of the anti-AI movement.
Firefox's kill switch and Waymo being forced toward that edge independence because infrastructure is fragile.
And finally, the victory of optimization over features.
Driven by Samsung's absolute need to be more efficient with One UI 8.5.
So if we look at this whole picture, it seems like there are two contradictory forces at play.
There are. On one hand, the future demands supreme software efficiency, like we see with Samsung killing bloat. But on the other hand, it demands absolute independence from the cloud, which is what Waymo and Firefox are proving.
So where does that leave us?
Well, that raises an important question for you to think about. If efficiency and reliability are the ultimate goals, how long until that highly complex mechanical hardware like the Xiaomi camera just becomes the next big optimization headache? Is true innovation always, in the end, sort of doomed by the need for simple, robust reliability?
Something to mull over until our next deep dive. We'll see you next time.